How can a Messiah from the line of Judah also be a priest? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm your host, Alden Thompson, and my conversation partners are Paul Dibdahl and Dave Thomas. There is a book in the Bible that answers this question for us.
It is true that generally priests were to be from the line of Levi, but in the book you mentioned, Alden, the book of Hebrews, we have the example given, Old Testament example, of someone who was a priest, called a priest, and was not from the line of Levi.
This is Melchizedek.
So there's the general rule, but we have in Scripture an exception, and Jesus then is likened to, you know, as a priest on the order of Melchizedek.
And of course, the book of Hebrews likes this because Melchizedek is an eternal priest. Now, we have access to God through Jesus Christ, is once for all service. So you almost see him say, wow, this is a great idea of Melchizedek.
Yeah.
Jesus is a priest according to the line of Melchizedek. Now, there's one other aspect that is intriguing here, and maybe I should just toss in the background. If you go back to the warrior kings, priests of the Maccabean Revolt. Now, we don't deal much with the Maccabean Revolt, but you have the time there when Antiochus Epiphanes, and we'll talk about that a bit more in the future, he was a small-time Syrian king, but he came into Jerusalem and polluted the sanctuary, built an altar to Zeus over the altar of the burnt offering, offered sacrifices to Zeus for 3 years. It was polluted, and it wasn't until the Maccabees, family of zealots, you might call them.
Rebels
took over, and as that family continued on, and they actually was able to develop quite a power base there, by the time they were through, they were a kingdom both of priests and rulers. Mm-hmm. So kings and priests were brought together. But I think there was some precedent for saying, yeah, you can have a priest and you can have a king, and they can be together in one person.
And I would like to draw a link between this week's lesson and last week because, you cannot understand Jesus and the plan of redemption in the light of the sanctuary without realizing that he has a dual role, both the sacrifice and the priest.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the actual visual aid of the temple or the tabernacle, those were distinct roles. They were different people or different entities. But Jesus is both.
Yeah, and that's one reason why you need, the metaphors are mixed all over the place because here you have the lamb dying, but then the lamb dying becomes the priest.
Yeah.
And so that's something we need to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
The book of Hebrews also argues with some tenacity that Jesus is a better high priest because he comes from human stock. Now, that's an interesting argument because even though Jesus comes from the line of Melchizedek, which is a, you might say, divine stock, Hebrews 4:16, therefore, 14 to 16, therefore, since we have a great high priest who has ascended into heaven, Jesus, the Son of Man, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet he did not sin. Let us then approach God's throne of grace with confidence, so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in our time of need.
Yeah, so I guess the question is, what does a priest do?
Now, is he going back to the world of earthly priests?
I'm saying in a broader sense, what is the function of a priest? Is it not a dual function?
Yeah.
On the one hand, the priest represents the people. On the other hand, the priest represents God.
Mm-hmm. I think the dominant emphasis of the priest, though, is that the priest represents the people to God.
To God, yeah.
A prophet, by contrast, represents God.
But the priest administers the rituals that are associated with God. So, there is an element in which this thing goes both ways.
Yeah.
I am particularly intrigued by this point you just made here about Jesus coming of human stock, because in the plan of redemption, there has to be a link from heaven to earth, but there also has to be a corresponding one from earth to heaven. And so if you have a priest who knows your infirmities, you have no more able advocate with God.
Element here that I would like to say, because once you say that Jesus is a priest who presents us to God, I grew up sensing that Jesus was my friend, but that somehow the Father had to be convinced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're not alone in that sort of perspective, Alden. I think that's the sense that many have come to.
That God will reluctantly save you if Jesus makes a good enough case for you.
Yeah, that's precisely the picture that I had. So, you know, I know some of my colleagues, including your father, Paul, was astonished when I, at Andrews University, I was a second-year seminary student, and I'd simply asked the question, if the Father loves me, why do I need a mediator? See, that was my question. And I discovered John 14-17, and it was there that I discovered that Jesus was God incarnate. And this picture of the hostile, reluctant God simply vanished. If God himself cared enough to come down here and live and die for me, he must really want me in his kingdom. Yeah. Yeah. That's what it did for me.
Yeah. Well, you have the same struggle in Gethsemane, where you have what looks like a struggle of wills between Jesus and the Father. And Jesus is trying to reconcile himself by prayer and struggling to the will of the Father. But if you look at it in a bigger sense, that's really an apparent struggle. It's Jesus in his humanity struggling against the prospect of a horrible death. It does not represent, well, put it the other way, the plan of redemption was forged out in eternity past where Jesus participated in that. So it's there's not a conflict of actual wills going on.
Now, I'd be particularly interested in your particular experience on this because, you know, Dave, you and I have talked about this before, the different perspectives on the cross. I discovered during that study, John 16:25-27, and I'll just read it for you here because it's really quite astonishing, I think. Jesus says to his disciples, I have said these things to you in figures of speech. The hour is coming when I will no longer speak to you in figures, but will tell you plainly of the Father. On that day you will ask in my name. I do not say to you that I will ask the Father on your behalf, for the Father himself loves you because you have loved me and have believed that I came from God. It's that knot that is so intriguing. In fact, if you're half asleep, you can listen to this same passage, and it was Graham Maxwell who pointed out that there's actually a published edition of the book Great Controversy where the knot is left out. And if you're half asleep during church when somebody's reading this, it makes perfectly good sense. I say to you that I will ask the Father on your behalf, for the Father himself loves you. That's Pauline theology. No, it sounds perfectly good, see. But it's not. And probably the best sermon that I ever heard on this mediator was by Ty Gibson. He says, why do you need a mediator? It's because the like parties are warring.
Tension between two parties, yeah.
And once you've brought them together, then you don't need a mediator anymore. So that interesting phrase, which has haunted so many Adventists, that we must stand in the sight of a holy God without a mediator— you can take this passage in John 16 and turn that from a threat into a promise.
That's true. It's good news. You don't need a mediator anymore.
You don't need a mediator anymore. And I would hasten to say, as long as you need a mediator, you've got one. But this is a promise, not a threat, to stand in the sight of a holy God without a mediator. But I think there are always times, I know there are sometimes when I'm overwhelmed with a sense of my own unworthiness. And I'm very grateful that at that point I have a high priest, you know, who's touched in all points as we are, and that we can really recognize that God is our friend and will help us in any way that we need it. See? Now, did either of you have the same struggle that I did growing up, that I sensed that God was a hostile God and really had to be convinced? Or was my illness just a significant illness that was linked to my own body chemistry?
I think I had elements of that, and I'm not sure how that arises. But yeah, Jesus was kind of the friendly one, and God was on a throne and more intimidating and so forth. God the Father was. I had that sort of sense growing up. I think the realization that you came to me maybe a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you have patterns of thought that even you have to keep reminding yourself that good news,
yeah,
even after you know it.
So. Yeah. It has to be repeated again and again and again.
Yeah.
I don't remember any struggles over this, although I do have this little inkling that I was more fearful of God than I was of Jesus. But it was never a big deal.
Never a big deal. Yeah.
No, because I guess I always understood that God was also involved in the plan of redemption.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess I saw God more in governmental ways. You know that His responsibility was to preserve the order and the stability of the universe.
Well, it would be very interesting. We don't have time, and this is not our lesson specifically. But it would be very interesting to explore in our personal conversations which of the various metaphors for Jesus is most meaningful. Jesus as the sacrificial lamb. Jesus as priest, representing us to the Father, Jesus as mediator, representing God to us, Jesus as king, our eternal and all-powerful ruler. That's rich territory there, but we'll have to explore that at some time other than this. Next week, our topic will be the pre-Advent judgment. We move into now more specific aspects about the last day applications of some of these things. I want to thank Paul and Dave, my conversation partners, and I want to thank also Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer. And to all of you for listening in, for the good word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.